The reading this morning is Nehemiah chapter 4. When Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall, he became angry and was greatly incensed. He ridiculed the Jews, and in the presence of his associates and the army of Samaria, he said, "What are those feeble Jews doing? Will they restore their wall? Will they offer sacrifices? Will they finish in a day? Can they bring the stones back to life from those heaps of rubble, burned as they are?" Tobiah, the Ammonite, who was at his side, said, "What they are building, if even a fox climbed up on it, he would break down their wall of stones." So I prayed, "Hear us, O our God, for we are despised. Turn their insults back on their own heads. Give them over as plunder in a land of captivity. Don't cover up their guilt or blot out their sins from your sight, for they have thrown insults in the face of the builders." So we rebuilt the wall till all of it reached half its height, for the people worked with all their heart. But when Sanballat, Tobiah, the Arabs, the Ammonites, and the men of Ashdod heard that the repairs to Jerusalem's walls had gone ahead and that the gaps were being closed, they were very angry. They all plotted together to come and fight against Jerusalem and stir up trouble against it. But we prayed to our God and posted a guard day and night to meet this threat. Meanwhile, the people in Judah said, "The strength of the laborers is giving out, and there is so much rubble that we cannot rebuild the wall." Also, our enemies said, "Before they know it or see us, we will be right there amongst them, and we'll kill them and put an end to their work." Then the Jews who lived near them came and told us 10 times over, "Wherever you turn, they will attack us." Therefore, I stationed some of the people behind the lowest points of the wall at the exposed places, posting them by families with their swords, spears, and bows. After I looked things over, I stood up and said to the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the people, "Don't be afraid of them. Remember the Lord, who is great and awesome, and fight for your brothers, your sons, daughters, your wives, and your homes." When our enemies heard that we were aware of their plot and that God had frustrated it, we all returned to the wall, each to his own work. From that day on, half of my men did the work, while the other half were equipped with spears, shields, bows, and armor. The officers posted themselves behind all the people of Judah who were building the wall. Those who carried materials did their work with one hand and held a weapon in the other. And each of the builders wore his sword at his side as he worked. But the man who sounded the trumpet stayed with me. Then I said to the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the people, "The work is extensive and spread out, and we are widely separated from each other along the wall. Wherever you hear the sound of the trumpet, join us there. Our God will fight for us." So we continued the work, with half the men holding spears, from the first light of dawn till the stars came out. At that time, I also said to the people, "Have every man and his helper stay inside Jerusalem at night, so that they can serve us as guards by night and workmen by day. Neither I, nor my brothers, nor my men or the guards with me took off our clothes. Each had his weapon, even when he went for water."
So as I said earlier, this morning we are going to be picking up on Nehemiah, considering this idea of dealing with opposition. Now, whether you're here in person or online, I want to take this opportunity to welcome you. I'm Nick, in case you don't know me. My name is Nick, and I'm one of the pastors here. And it's my privilege to speak this morning. I want to start by asking you a question, especially if you like board games. What is your favourite? Scrabble, okay, thank you. Snakes and ladders. Ludo. Dobble. Anything else? Trivial pursuit, okay. I don't know, some of us are into board games. Some of us, there are some of the, in their 20s, there are some really complicated games out there, classified as board games, but they can take days to play. And one of the games, a bit like that, that I really enjoy playing is, or did enjoy, it was Risk. This was a game that I grew up with, and in case you don't know what Risk is, I'll explain. It's a board game based around strategy, and you control armies, and you get reinforcements, and then you've got to invade, and then you can defend. And the idea is that you've got to try and achieve your mission. So everybody has a mission card, and then you try and work on it. Now, if you don't want to play mission orientated, you can just play world domination, when you just basically try and take over the whole lot. And I used to play this with my friends. This is really sad. I'm going to admit this, but I am. New Year's Eves. When I was in my 20s, 18, 19, 20s, I used to play Risk with my friends on New Year's Eve, and we would see the new year in playing that board game rather than going out and going to the nightclub and stuff like that. But I just really enjoyed playing it. And it was all about strategy and about beating the opposition. And I play it with my boys, and they used to get really frustrated. Because in this game, there is risk involved. Okay, there is risk, but you also, therefore, can get reward. Now, my boys would risk very quickly, and they would lose very quickly. Whereas I was like, no, you've got to build up a bit of defences, you build up, then you attack. You don't just go, right, straight in. So for me, when thinking about this theme of dealing with opposition, this came to my mind, because it was just a game that I used to love playing, and it involved dealing with opposition. So today we are going to carry on looking into Nehemiah. We're going to carry on looking into Nehemiah. We're going to be focusing on how to deal with opposition. Perhaps you have had experiences dealing with opposition when you have been playing sport, like I've already said. Maybe you've experienced opposition from playing sport. Or perhaps you'd go, well, I don't really feel, I don't think I've dealt with opposition. I'm not really aware of it. But if I was to rebrand it as conflict, problems, maybe then you can think, oh yeah, no, actually I have experienced opposition. Because these are the sort of things we may experience in our work environment, or maybe in our family, or maybe just in a general day-to-day of life. I know that I've had opportunities or times when I've had a bit of conflict, and you have to work through it. So picking up on the story of Nehemiah, we see, don't we, at the beginning of the reading, that the work's begun. The walls of Jerusalem are being built. The people are being united in this task under the leadership and direction of Nehemiah. Isn't that great? I had a few nods. It is. It's good. They are making progress. Last week, we talked about how Nehemiah felt was so upset, oh burdened, because he heard that the city and the people were floundering. So then he approached again. He's now at the point where he's come and they've started to work. The man of prayer and action has got the work underway. Now the problem is that those people around them were not happy. They began to see that their neighbours' attitudes were changing. This directionless people are becoming a people of focus. They're becoming a people of focus. According to those powers around them, they needed to be addressed. They needed to be dealt with because they wanted to keep them suppressed. They didn't want this people, this Israel, to be growing again, to be flourishing. Because in these times of practical outworking, having the wall built, it demonstrated that the city was becoming more powerful again. Because that's the whole symbol of having a really big wall around your city. It says, look, we are the man. We are the power in this area. You don't deal with us. You don't mess with us. And the surrounding people saying, well, we need to deal with that now. We don't want them to re-establish themselves as this power in our area. So as we've heard, read this morning, the rebuilding, the rebuilding of the walls brings opposition. And this can be true for us, can't it? It can be so true for us. If we become obedient and focused on something, on the job in hand, opposition, problems, conflict becomes evident. And this isn't just in the church. It can be outside of the church, in terms of just in the local community. But we can see it as Christians. We can see that there is opposition to us and to the way that potentially we want to live, the way that we want to model something can create opposition because it's different to what the world looks to be. But what did the opposition look like? There were some people. Sanballat was the main character, and he had some other guys, some of his cronies, his friends, other leaders, and they opposed in four ways. And we're going to look at them. Through ridicule in verses 1 to 4, through intimidating plots, discouragement, fear. Perhaps we ourselves can recognize these forms of opposition in our lives. Perhaps you've experienced discouragement, or you've been ridiculed. So ridicule, verses 1 to 4. The first line of opposition was this ridicule. Sanballat and his companions called these feeble Jews. You feeble Jews, what do you think you're doing? You can't do anything. Through this opposition, they were suggesting that they had nothing to offer. Have you ever felt like that, that people have opposed you and you've just come away thinking, I've got nothing to offer? Well, I'm useless. I've felt that. When I was younger, I've had that. Through this opposition, that they had nothing to do, nothing to use. The fact that they were saying, listen, look at these walls. They're really shoddy. Call yourselves, you're not builders, are you? Look at it. A fox could just jump on that and it would fall off and it would destroy the wall. They were ridiculing the efforts. He was saying, you have nothing. He was questioning. He was challenging them what they were doing. Will you really restore the wall? Is it really going to hold? Is it going to be as good as it was? The world doesn't understand. The world doesn't understand that God delights in using feeble instruments to get his work done. But as we see through the Old Testament, throughout the Old Testament, God uses the weak to reveal his power. And it's the same in the New Testament. In 2 Corinthians 12, we discover that when we are weak, then we are strong in him. For in our weakness, God is able to do more and build our strength. Because it's not about us. It's not about the people of Israel. It's about their God. The next opposition came through, intimidating plots. Is it true that a common enemy will bring other enemies together? Yeah. People who can have different views can all of a sudden come together when they're trying a unified, we're going against that. And that's what was going on here. You see what was happening in Jerusalem, united four different groups of people together to offer opposition to the work being done to restore the walls. We read that the city was surrounded by enemies. They didn't want to see a strong community in Jerusalem. Sometimes it can be difficult for God's people to work together. It can be difficult for God's people to work together. But the world has no problem uniting in opposition to the work of the Lord. So as we see the further work and progress, the enemy became angry. They were not pleased. They decided to plan a secret attack. They were trying to spread rumors. They were saying, we will do something. And the people panicked. And this then led to the third way of opposition. Discouragement. Discouragement. Pressures from without often create problems from within. It's easy to continue to work when you are aware of the danger around you and you see the overwhelming task that faces you, like building a major wall. Sanballat was a leader who knew this, that sometimes the battle is won without even laying a hand on the opposition. If he could sow discouragement, then perhaps the Jews would defeat themselves. They may just give up on their own accord. Realize that, humanly speaking, the task was so big. Imagine a city building a massive wall. This wasn't like a single brick thick wall. It was like, you know, from this block, I don't know, but I would imagine it's going to be something like this, at least that thick. That's a big challenge, isn't it? That is a massive challenge. So you see, I would get discouraged very quickly. Are you sure you can do it? Look at that. Look at all the rubbish out there that you've got to use to build it. You're not going to make it. I, you know, discouragement is very easily sown. And maybe some of us have experienced that. Because discouragement is a key weapon that the devil uses. It's how he stopped Israel from entering the promised land the first time. Because he sent 10 dissenting voices, swayed the people not to listen to the two that said, no, we can do it. We can do it. But 10 said, oh no, they're big, they're scary. Let's go somewhere else. The discouragement stopped the people moving into the promised land. The discouragement could stop the people building the wall. Discouragement could stop us fulfilling God's purpose for us as a church, but also as individuals. So how can we see God's people begin to be discouraged? Well, partly from what we read in chapter 6, if you go a bit later on, you can see, because they're discouraged. Because actually, some of the tribe of Judah were secretly cooperating with Sanballat because they're in it for money. They were willing to go, oh, actually, you give me some money and I'll arbitrate. They were interested in money, and therefore they were the ones that used to spread discouragement. I know. I've got a child trying to write an essay at the moment, and actually she gets a bit of discouragement or a bit of pressure and she gets distracted. It stops her doing what she's meant to be doing. And I can imagine the people here getting their discouragement to then stopping again. Well, we just, yes, it's right, we can't do it. We can't. And maybe that's in your work life. You've got somebody who's saying, yeah, you're not very good at this. And that discouragement then stops you from fulfilling what you can do. You are very capable of achieving something. And then another method, fear. The last method of opposition came from fear, and that's seen in 11 to 13 of chapter 4. Those in opposition surrounding the city spread rumors regarding attacking the city, which then came to those people who were in the villages surrounding the city, who then said, oh, run into the city. Guess what? They're going to attack. Panic. What do we do? They created fear in the minds of those within the city. You see, fear paralyzes, doesn't it? Fear paralyzes. Fear is contagious. Fear is a disease that spreads rapidly, especially through people who are feeling discouraged. So for Nehemiah, he was trying to, how can I battle this? how can I change this? So Nehemiah combats this opposition. Despite all the ridicule coming Nehemiah's way, he responded the only way he knew how. As we heard last week, being a man of prayer and action, in response to the barrage of ridicule, he prayed and asked God to fight the enemy for him. Nehemiah didn't allow himself to get distracted or taken off course from achieving his task. He just actively encouraged the people and got on with the task in hand. He said, no, he rallied the people. Come on, we can do this. The battle, the intimidating plots, Nehemiah also posted guards around the city. He said, look, we'll put people around to offer protection. And he said, there's the bugle person will be with me. If there's a problem, we will blast and you'll know. He equipped people with both tools and weapons. so that if the signal was to come, people were prepared to fight. To battle the opposition of discouragement, Nehemiah reminded the people that the Lord who was with them is greater and is great and awesome. A thought which is emphasized in 1 John 4:4. He also sought not to pay attention to those complainers, but he went right on with the work. He sought to set an example that would encourage the people. He was a great leader. He said, look, I'll do it. Do it with me. Do it with me. He then sought to combat fear. His first step was to post guards at the most conspicuous and vulnerable places on the wall. The enemy could then see that the Jews were prepared to fight, and then he armed families, didn't he? Knowing that they would then stand together and encourage each other. Have you seen that film, Braveheart? When you got the English and the Scots, and they were there, we do it together. They were fighting for each other, whereas the English were just, actually, we're just doing this because we're told to do it. So Nehemiah was saying, we're doing it together. Put families near each other. Families fight for each other. They also fight for where they live. So we made sure that they were defending the bits where their houses were being built. He then sought to remind the people that if they feared the Lord, they had no need to fear the opposition, for God was with them. Also, through developing protective plans, Nehemiah had half the people working, half guarding. And he encouraged those who lived out in the villages to come as well, so they then guarded overnight. Excuse me. Nehemiah knew where the focus should be. Across all the opposition, Nehemiah sought to set the right example. He was a leader who served as a servant. He stayed on the job. He was always alert. He inspired the city's defenses every night and made sure that the guards were on duty. People trusted him and rose above the opposition. So what can we take away from this? Now, I know we aren't facing opposing armies trying to disrupt us and distract us, unlike some people in our world currently. We know that there are some places where war is actually at the doorstep. But I believe we're all facing things that draw our focus away from seeking to live life in all its fullness, which is something Jesus offers to us in John 10:10. As we consider dealing with opposition, perhaps to help us reflect on this, we need to broaden, as I've said, to consider both problems and conflicts that we are facing in our day-to-day life. Perhaps we might face ridicule in the workplace, or at school, or even from family. Maybe we at times feel overwhelmed by the tasks we have to do. Perhaps we have had setbacks in our relationships or our career plans, which have left us feeling discouraged. Whatever the case, whatever the problem or conflict, if we know God, then I would encourage us to seek to keep our focus on God. For this was what Nehemiah did. Despite the opposition from around, he kept God the main thing. Got a picture of a fighter. He's actually my niece's boyfriend. And, you know, he fights. He goes against opposition. But he's got people in his corner helping him, directing him, helping him keep focus. We have God. If we know God, he's in our corner. So if we would say, yeah, I'm a Christian and I have got God in my life, he's in your corner. Whatever the opposition that you face, he's with you. You may not think it, but he is. He'll tend to those wounds. He'll relax the muscles. You can do this. You can do this. We're in it together. Just as Nehemiah believed that, because that was, you know, to see armies coming against you, he had confidence in God. You know, knowing God doesn't stop problems. And I think most of us would acknowledge that. I've known God for all my life, really, been brought up in a Christian home. I've acknowledged him as my Lord and Savior since I was 16. I'm now 50-something. But I've still experienced issues in my life. But what having God in it means, he walks with me. He's got my back. He is the one who is saying, keep going. Keep going. This morning, if you haven't got a personal relationship with God, then I want to invite you to take what I've shared and consider it for yourself. I recognize that people face opposition all the time. But personally, I wouldn't want to face it without God. I want God with me rather than without me. Sometimes people say, oh, do you need a crutch? Yes. Because some people think you have a crutch. If you've got God in your life, you need a crutch. Actually, having God in my life is the best crutch I can have. Because he helps me every day to keep moving forwards. So today, whatever you are up against, whatever the opposition, whatever the problem, whatever the conflict that you may face, whatever area in your life, imagine, picture the boxer in the corner. He has a focus, and that focus is, I'm going to win. When we're in that corner, we have a focus. I'm doing it for God. I'm living my life for God. My focus is God. I'm looking at him because he is bigger than any problem. Where is your focus? Is it on the problems? If it is, they will seem massive. But I want us to consider moving our focus onto God. Just as Peter did, wasn't it? Peter stepped out of the boat when he kept his eyes on Jesus. He remained above the water. When he took it and he looked around, he goes, oh dear, look at all these issues. Look at the storm. Look at the waves. He started to sink. Let's keep our eyes on Jesus. Because in doing that, we will overcome opposition. Let's pray. Because then we're going to move into communion. Father, I thank you that in you and with you, we can face all opposition. Help us to have you as our focus. Lord, I am so grateful that Nehemiah kept you as the main thing. He wasn't swayed. So Lord, bless us now. Be with us. I pray as we go, whether we know you or not, we would come to know you as our focus. And Lord, for those that don't yet know you, I pray right now as we come around the table and we reflect on what you did for us by dying on a cross, it may speak to people. And they might say, yeah, I recognize, see that sacrifice, I need to say sorry. I want you in my life. Because you hung on a cross for me. Lord, bless us, encourage us, remind us of your faithfulness. Amen.